Welcoming everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They're a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City, and they want you to be the best-dressed fan all year long. So be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit any time of year. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs. Here's the best part. You can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm my host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's podcasting like someone in a Victorian painting, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Paint me like one of your French girls, Gerald. yes. I am prostrate. There's an R in there.
Yeah, there's an R in there. Yeah.
Laying back and recording. I don't know. It worked for the Sufi singers who sing sitting cross-legged and sitting
Sufjan
down?
Sufjan Stevens, what?
Yes, probably. But you're supposed to get the best diaphragm action. I don't know. We'll see. Let us know how the audio sounds this week compared to other weeks as Kyle comes from the sitting position, from the comfort of a three-quarters prone podcast for reasons. But Gerald, I'm fantastic. It is March. It is madness. How are you?
My middle child almost met the Lord prematurely after he stood in my office door in darkness for several minutes right before we recorded and nearly scared the crap out of me and learned his first swear word all at the same time. So things are going well in the Goodrich household, but no, things are good, man. It is madness, not just in my home with my three-year-old's bedtime. It's also madness on the hardwood. The Texas Longhorns, both the men and the women, one of just 22 athletic programs with both teams dancing in the March light, going to the NCAA tournament. The ladies leading the charge, per usual, getting a number one seed, while the men actually exceeded expectations and got a 7 seed. Kyle and I both were wrong on our Podstradamus picks last week. We both said they were going to go over. I set the line way too high. I think I set the line at, 8.5? And we both went over that. They ended up under at a 7 seed, but that's either here nor there. The ladies, the fourth number one seed overall, will host the first and second rounds at the Moody Center in front of 10,000 plus fans there. They are 15-2 at the Mood. They've got Drexel in the first round, number 16, the CAC Colonial Athletic Conference champion. But I'm going to be really honest with you, Kyle. The size disparity here is the thing that is going to, that jumps out to me when you look at the tail of the tape.
Gerald, before I start on my analysis, no one can accuse us of sunshine pumping anymore. We're officially pessimists with that men's bracket. But on the ladies, they are playing Drexel. Gerald, can you name the mascot of Drexel University?
Clyde.
Pride is what you're going for?
The Clyde Drexels. The Drexel
Clydes. Oh, the Clydes. That's not a, I don't actually hate that. That sounds like a very good NIL opportunity. Just think about that. Drexel, of course, in Philadelphia, they are the Drexel Dragons. Drexel Dragons.
That's right up my alley. Wait for my Thursday Godzillatron.
Can't wait. I'll just say they did win that Colonial Athletic Conference, but as a 7 seed, kind of a long shot and wild story to get here. Momentum's a funny thing. You know, curious if they can ride the wave. Texas also won their tournament, so they're both coming off a high there. But yes, I think, Gerald, you hit the nail on the head, right? They have one starter who's 6'2". They have another player who doesn't play much who's 6 foot. And I believe when I looked at their roster, those are the only two players I saw above 6 feet. And if there's anything that Vic Schaefer kind of teams of yesteryear when their tournaments ended and some of those, you know, think of those very tall Stanford teams were just trees inside, it was bigs. It was the size in March that became their Achilles heel. That has certainly not been the case for Texas this season. As mentioned on a previous podcast, out of their 30 wins, 27 of them by double digits. And I think they were only out-rebounded in like four games this season. They won one game where they were out-rebounded, but the other three were their losses. So Texas being bigger than her opponents, crashing the glass, playing big is the strength of this team. Shooting three-pointers, not necessarily the strength of Texas's team. That will be how Drexel looks to attack and hopes to get hot, right? And that can be an interesting formula. But I think Texas will run their game. I think, you know, teams that haven't seen Vic Schaefer pressure before usually wilt and crumble the first time. And so this one could be over early if the defensive intensity and the pressure is there and Texas is just able to run their offense, get good shots and execute. Keep people out of foul trouble and you know, just go do their thing and keep everybody healthy. This should be a you know, even though I'm not discounting or disparaging a team that won their conference tournament, Texas is playing well. They won 12 of their last 13. They look locked in. You know, we talked about their tough run to get to the where they're at right now, to get to the conference championship and the one seed. It was not easy, and you know, I think, again, you take a bizarre traveling call against Matty Booker out at the end of the season against OU, and they've won their last 13 straight. They're playing very, very well. They're a hot team right now, even despite being the highly seeded favorite. I think the last one seed to lose to a 16 seed was like Stanford losing to Harvard in the 80s in women's games. So it's very, even in the 70s, it's very rare that happens. And so, you know, not saying it can't, and I know Vic won't prepare that way, but, you know, this should be one where Texas adds, I would imagine, another notch to that double digit win total.
There's always talk about guards in the men's game and talk about the men's tournament, but when push comes to shove, like on the lady side of things, size wins. Size has won tournaments. You think about, it's going to pain me to say these names, but you think about Kim Mulkey's greatest teams, right? Mm-hmm. Kim Mulkey, you cannot argue. I don't like Kim Mulkey as a person and some of the things she believes in, but as a coach, she is unimpeachable, right? And her best teams were like Brittany Griner, or her best teams have a 6'3" Angel Reese running the team as the star, right? Some of those, you think about the Paris sisters way back when. The ladies' game, as much as the stars are the guards, the best teams are the teams that seem to win are the ones that can dominate in the post. And I think that's the big advantage that Texas doesn't just have in this game, but I think that is the advantage that Texas has in this tournament and in this bracket. I think they've got an opportunity to really do something. They've got a great big team, and they've got a team that plays defense. There's a lot to be said about the fact that defense travels, right? And they are going to be the team that's going to play more so than any other team in the country, probably. That old school, gritty, you know, I hate when they slap the floor, but like, you know, they pull up your shorts, get down in your squat, keep your hands up kind of defense, right? I think that's what Vic Schaefer wants them to be. And I keep coming back to this, like, how good would this team be if Rory Harmon was on the squad? I cannot get away from that. Like, they got a number one freaking seed without the player that would likely be in the conversation for Naismith. She'd at least be a finalist for the Naismith, right? Yeah. Like, there's no two ways around that. And even with that, Matty Booker made her way to the Naismith list. She picked up some third-team All-American honors as well, but she's a semifinalist for the Naismith Player of the Year. Vic Schaefer, for his trouble, a semifinalist for the Women's Coach of the Year, for getting the team to its 36th March Madness, which is third all-time.
Yeah, and just a note on that, right? Like, we were talking about the week before she got hurt, after they beat UConn, after she objectively was playing two ways, scoring, running the offense, no turnovers, everything she was doing, the efficiency of the team, that very realistically, if she kept that pace up, that you were looking at not just an All-American, another All-American performance from Rory Harmon, but legitimately she would be the person to challenge Caitlin Clark for player of the year, right? 100%. And it's not an exaggeration. Like, I think it's easy 3 months removed from that to forget, like, how good she was when she went down. And then most coaches would say, all right, we have an experienced player in Shaylee Gonzalez. She's run point guard. She's a natural ball handling second guard. She's, you know, just run the offense through her, plug and play. She's not Rory. It's not necessarily her whole game, but you know, we have a trusted person. We'll give it to her. We don't have a ton of other, you know, guards on this team with ball handling experience, but we'll let it run through her. And instead, Vic said, well, we have a really good player, our best player, who I think could do all kinds of things, even though she's never played point guard in her entire career as a wing. Why don't we just coach Maddie Booker up and make her? And so that decision, I think, elevated both Madison Booker into the National Player of the Year conversation, but absolutely, absolutely elevated Vic Schaefer. And I think he was robbed of the Big 12 Coach of the Year. And I hope, as he's one of the 10 finalists for the Naismith, that he's not robbed there as well. So both congrats to both of them making the final 10 for the Naismith Awards. Another player who's just about that conversation, maybe just outside of it. If they do face number 9 Florida State in the second round, the winner of Alabama and Florida State, who will both be playing in the mood as well, will play the winner of the 116, which we hope will be Texas if it is Florida State. Taniya Latson was an All-American and a really great two-way player for FSU, who, you know, is a year ahead of Madison Booker, and it would be very interesting. She's not, doesn't have the size, but a kind of combo guard who can do everything. Really, really great player to see kind of match up those two. So it will be an interesting matchup if they get Florida State. We'll talk about that once we know the results. Don't want to look too far ahead. But again, a good bracket, and when you look at their entire kind of what's in their half of the bracket, there's a lot to like about Texas's draw. If they can just win the games they should, and then they'll have a rematch redemption, you know, chance against Stanford, likely to get to a Final Four. So I like the way the bracket lays out for them.
Like you said that I have to like pause when we think about how well Rory Harmon was playing when she went down. Like, she was averaging 14 points, 8 assists, 8 assists and 3.5 steals per game when she went out.
Mm-hmm.
That is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and she only had, I believe, she was averaging less than, or like right at 1 turnover a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ridiculous. So, like, we cannot and will not move on from women's basketball before we say that, like, Rory Harmon would have challenged Caitlin Clark likely for the Naismith, or at least been on the podium, for lack of a better term. On the men's side, though, the men snuck in and got rewarded. I don't know for what, but they got rewarded for something. Got a 7 seed, although it may not turn out to be a reward. They're going to face either Colorado State or UVA on Thursday in Charlotte. The play-in game is happening as we're recording right now between UVA and Colorado State. It would be the first matchup with UVA, or the third against Colorado State in this one. If they win that matchup, then they would get Mr. March himself, Rick Barnes, and the Tennessee Volunteers in the round of 32.
Yeah, it's really interesting looking at their bracket, right? Tennessee and Rick Barnes, like, perennially, we saw it at Texas, like, the talent versus the output don't always match up in March. Purdue fans, I know a few, are just incredibly pessimistic. Like, they're not the fans who we're going to win it all. They're like, we're going to find a way to lose. They've been burned before, and they just have a feeling that their team can't do it in March. Someone needs to take advantage for this region where that's your 1 and 2 seed. I'm not saying it's going to be Texas or should or will, or don't hear me say any of that. I don't know. Creighton looks interesting in that 3 spot, but yeah, it's a very interesting bracket nonetheless, just because there's some really good teams, but there's some teams that have either will buck historical precedent and break a streak, or just create absolute chaos. So it'll be very interesting. Texas has never made consecutive Elite Eights. Rick Barnes did go Elite Eight, second round Elite Eight in a 3-year span, but never made consecutive Elite Eights. So that, you know, they did last year, obviously. It'd be Again, no one's saying that's a guarantee or even particularly likely, but we'll see. Tradition has to be bucked in some place. But Texas is, I mean, it is a little bit of context, even though we haven't had the traditional kind of Final Four and championship game and NCAA championship pedigree as some others. It's important to remember they're one of only six schools to appear in at least 30 of the last 35 NCAA tournaments. They are all, like, borderline a blue blood in the past 4 decades, which is a little bit crazy to think of. But Gerald, the stat that blew my mind, they have not beaten a team ranked higher than them since what year?
2003.
Very close, Gerald. Texas men's basketball has not beaten a higher ranked opponent in March since 2002.
Oh, I went with the TJ Ford year. That was where I went.
It's fair. But no, I mean, you mentioned it off the top, right? This, looking at this collectively, one of the 22 teams, I think it says something, you know, about the fact that A&M squeaked in maybe both their men and women's teams to be one of those 22. OU got their women's in, but not their men's. Remember, OU was ranked number 11 on January 23rd when the Horns came to Norman and just broke them, beat them by 15 points, which they then, from number 11, subsequently went 5-7, including a blowout loss to Texas on the final day of the season to probably put a nail in the coffin on their tournament hopes. So that's nice, and I still enjoy things like that. I'm a simple man. Also, don't ever say the NCAA as an organization is dead and has nothing to offer us, because what they chose to do by scheduling Nebraska to play A&M in the opening round of not one but both tournaments, just days after Nebraska legend and current AD Trev Albert was announced as A&M athletic director, his first tweet encouraging both the men's coaches was kind of awkward, and then when he had to tweet a second one, like, in disbelief, encouraging both of the women's coaches of his current and future employer. Just a wonderful troll by the NCAA. And then my last piece, looking kind of nationally here, Gerald, is Drake joined the University of Houston, joined Tillman Fertitta for their...
Not the school Drake.
That is correct. hip hop and R&B sensation Drake, formerly or just recently at the Houston Rodeo as part of Bun B's takeover a few nights ago, stayed in Houston to be a part. Drake loves sports and loves
Jimmy from Degrassi.
Correct. Loves all teams, and he does love Houston, Atlanta, and Vegas. But he stayed to be there, oddly, for U of H's bracket reveal, their number one seed party. Gerald, I believe there's something of a Drake curse. What do you think this means for the Cougars' chances?
Well, Drake showed up to Texas preseason, and Rory Harmon got freaking hurt. I'm just going to say that something – I don't want to wish violence or death or anything on someone, but I could see a situation where now, because of Drake showing up, the entire Houston basketball team is going to get dysentery, like the Oregon Trail, and have to forfeit a game. It's like how I feel the Drake curse is going to play out, because I don't want to wish injury on anybody. And, you know, with modern medicine, dysentery is really just like an inconvenience in the U.S. Like, it's a real problem for places that are still do not have the infrastructure and the medical support system that the United States does or other countries of our ilk. But that being said, in the U.S., it's like an IV and a pill. So, like, yeah, they're going to poop themselves.
I like it. That's a nice summation in 3 words to what no notes, perfectly executed. Moving on.
Moving on, hopefully the Longhorns will do the same on both the men's side and the ladies' side. And we'll be back. Our next show this week, we're actually going to do a live reaction show on Thursday night into it'll hit your podcast feeds on Friday to talk about the men playing either CSU or UVA, whichever one comes out of the game that they're playing right now. The other group of young men on campus, young people on campus, that are participating in athletic events all over. The football team officially started spring practice, starting the countdown to the orange and white game here in April. But Texas got on the field for the first time wearing what Coach Steve Sarkisian calls underwear today. Not underwear, but the jerseys and no pads, kind of a conditioning day, getting everybody back into the swing of things. Had a press conference about it. One of the most notable things that he mentioned, on top of all of it, is that this is the highest number of participants they've had in spring practice since they've been here. So they were able to go three deep. They have three full units that they can run for spring practice, which we have come a long way from the previous regimes where, you know, his first year, Texas couldn't run a full spring game because they didn't have bodies enough to do it healthily. He talked about, in his presser, he talked about Quinn Ewers coming out, building rapport with the new wide receivers, getting used to the new in-helmet communication options that they have. Talked about the new wide receivers that are very versatile, switching them in positions. A couple of players came in a little bit heavier than they wanted to. There's a lot to talk about, Kyle, but as you think about spring, like, what is the storyline, or what is the storylines that you're watching the most for spring football?
I think when we think about what this offense can be, right, we lost three really incredible playmakers in the receiving room, lost some, you know, a great running back or two, honestly. There's a lot to replace, but they look to reload and not rebuild, and obviously use the continuity of bringing Ewers back to elevate. And so what I look at, of course, you mentioned it, is his cadence with these new receivers. Everyone's kind of first impression when asked about how the receivers looked is fast. It's the word we keep hearing. They're just fast. They're fast. They're fast. And that's great. But, you know, Ewers has to get that timing down, right? Like, everyone on the field is an Xavier Worthy right now, which is a great problem to have, but you need to be able to get the ball there, right? So a lot is on Ewers' shoulders. A lot is on the timing, the getting comfortable. I think the last pass of the open portion was a deep corner route into the, you know, pylon to Isaiah Bond, which, you know, that's something you're going to want to see. Like, Ewers putting a pretty deep ball out there, letting his fast receivers go and make plays, right? So how he meshes is one thing, but also I'm really, really, really interested at scheme, if they're running 12 personnel, if Nyblack and Gunnar Helm are out there a lot, if they go 21 personnel with two backs. I'm wildly interested to see what this offensive line with continuity, you know, raises our floor to, and then the running backs. Like, I think our running backs, you know, have a potential, as much as we both love Jonathan Brooks, when you have a CJ Baxter who's more experienced, more, you know, a year further removed from high school, he's gonna bring more. He's just gonna need to. He's gonna be required to, and I think he's going to. And then when you think about what Jaden Blue is really developing into, also being called out as a vocal leader, I really like our 1-2 punch at running back. So you know, as much as we ended up with just a really one punch with Jonathan Brooks, and that's not to take anyone else away, but while he was healthy, he didn't need to take the ball out of his hands.
Didn't need anybody else's punch.
This year, I think it will be spread around. And so just the multiplicity, the different looks, how they get the ball in the playmaker's hands, the offense, and how they take a step up and not a step back, to me, is what I'll be watching.
Yeah, and the offense is what you're watching now. I can't talk about the running backs without talking about Jarrett Gibson, the other five-star freshman. I guess he's a high four-star, dropped that fifth star. But that dude looks like a grown man body. And I was talking about it with the other BON writers. I don't know how these 18-year-olds can afford these tattoos. My wife's last tattoo was like a mortgage payment, what it felt like. It was at least both of our car notes. So, like, I just don't know. But anyway, he is, and this is no shot at CJ Baxter, because I love CJ Baxter, but CJ Baxter runs really upright. He's a very tall, broad-built guy. He's more like Steven Jackson. You remember him from the Los Angeles Rams. Love Steven Jackson. Won me a fantasy championship. Used to spam him in Madden and kill some fools. CJ Baxter is built more like Fred Taylor, just a little muscle ball. And it's just going to have a naturally lower center of gravity, easier to make himself small in the hole. So I'm curious to see if he morphs himself into specifically the short yardage guy, whereas you kind of rotate, you rotate Blue, you rotate Baxter, and then you get Jared Gibson in on your short yardage and in your goal line situations. But you talked about the offensive line. I'm curious to see how the battles for left guard and right tackle shake out. It seems like it's probably going to be big Cam Williams. He came in and started some games last year when Christian Jones was hurt. But there's a lot to be said about that. And then really my eyes are on the defensive line like they usually are. You know, it's hard. You don't replace guys like Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat, but Sark called out specifically some of the guys that we're looking at to step in, and he talked about how it looks like Alfred Collins and Vernon Brontner are poised to make the jump that Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy made this year, while guys like Jare Bledsoe, Aaron Bryant, are going to take the leap that Vernon and Alfred made last year, kind of being the rotational guys. I also mentioned Alex January. I love that big young cat. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. I mean, you just don't. It's impossible to replace conference defensive player and conference defensive lineman of the year. But if you think back to when Oscar Giles landed Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton, we were like dancing in the freaking streets. Yeah. And if those dudes can live up to the potential that we saw from them 4 years ago in that last class under Oscar Giles, like, this defense can have as big of an impact as it did last year, which is one of the best run defenses in the country. And it allowed your linebackers to play really well and allow them to do more things in more, be more multiple defensively. I'm also curious to see what the linebacker crew looks like. Kendrick Blackshire came in from Alabama, a Texas kid who came to Austin for kind of a final kind of polishing year, for lack of a better term. He's going to be playing. According to Sark, he came in a little heavier than they would like him to be. Which, if you look at pictures of Kendrick Blackshire, I would love to look like that and for somebody to say I was too heavy. It's like the Jordan Whittington school of being too heavy, where you're like, there's just too much muscle on him. So I'm curious to see that. But him playing alongside Anthony Hill and David Benda is going to be an interesting thing. I want to see what that group looks like in the absence of Jalen Ford. So those are the things that I'm really watching coming to spring.
Yeah, and I'll add another one in, Gerald. It's a little less specific to a player and a little more kind of esoteric, but will involve some players, and I'm excited to see who the names we're saying in a couple weeks. But spring ball is a good time. Winter workouts are a good time for this as well, but spring ball is a good time for leadership, vocal leaders to step up and find out who sets the tone for the team, right? Mack Brown won a championship because Vince Young took over and led the team, right? And some other, you know, players, Casey Stud and others, have played that role in various capacities on our best teams, right? And even of recent note, like, it's not always just the best player on the team is the vocal leader. Sometimes those guys step up and show themselves. And we're replacing, as we said a lot, we're replacing some quiet leaders. We're replacing some vocal leaders, replacing middle linebacker Jalen Ford. Like, you're replacing guys who've been in the program for a long time. But you're also replacing a couple really vocal coaches and leaders. I'll say two very important coaches in a quiet leader in Jeff Choate in that linebacker room and on the defensive side of the ball. And then also Bo Davis, who we all know Bo Davis was correct. And Bo Davis says what's on his mind, and that sometimes that works. So you're replacing a lot. So I'm kind of curious to see who steps up and who's the player who takes control of the room, who pushes the guys, because that's as important right now as it is going to be in September and October. You make the small gains right now that lead to, you know, winning plays, to beating Kansas State on the last play of the game with a batted ball. Like, you make the gains for those 1 inch, and not to be, you know, Pacino on us right now, but the inches we need are everywhere. Like, those inches are happening right now. And so who's stepping up and challenging their teammates, pushing guys, setting the example with their own work? I'm curious to see who takes that mantle kind of the cultural steward and leader in spring.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be sorry to turn on my fan because it's getting hot here. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see who can become the leader. Obviously, you want your quarterback, Quintravius Ewers, to be kind of leader. I'm curious to see who else steps up. So, Kyle, it's the time for our Prize Picks Podstradamus moment pick. I don't know what you want to call it. But remember, Prize Picks is the best legal way to play player props in states like California, Florida, and Texas. It is an easy way to play daily fantasy. Just grab the app from whichever app store you use. It's got a 4.8 review on both of those, one of the best reviewed apps on the store. You can mix and match sports, go over and under on stats. It's NBA season. You got March Madness going on. So you can pick stats, player stats, just go over and under, and you can win 10 times up to 10 times on any entry. And just for our listeners, if you grab that app and you use the code Longhorn12, you will get a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. That's right. Using the code Longhorn12 can get you up to $100 free to have some fun with during March. It's honestly one of the best ways to enjoy March Madness a little bit. Just have a little bit of extra fun on the game. So, Kyle, Texas had a record number, at least for Steve Sarkisian, of players for fall. They have 18 of their 23 early enrollees. Kyle, I want to know from you, which of the early enrollees or the new additions you think is going to play the biggest role in the 2024 season?
Early enrollees or transfers? Because it's two different questions, and I was ready to answer one, and now I...
Go early enrollees. I think that's what I initially queued you up for.
Okay, and that's fair. And so first I'm going to say one who I don't think is the right answer, but I don't think either of us will say him, so I'm going to give him shine. I think Wardell Mack is turning a lot of heads, a guy who I've heard described as just like makes everything on the football field look easy. I think he could be a special teams hammer. If he doesn't get, you know, break through a cornerback room as a true freshman, I think that's a good problem or a good thing. That's okay. We have depth there, especially if Chad Barron moves out. But anyways, if he's not getting plays there, he seems like the type of guy who's going to make plays as soon as he touches the field. So I like Wardell Mack as a player just to make some noise on special teams, I hope. I think there is a right answer here, and I'm going to leave it for you because I think I stole it the last time we were talking about some of the guys we were most excited about. So
I'm
going to drop down to my number two here because I do have a number one, but I don't want to repeat myself. There's a new Xavier in town, right? After Mr. X Worthy made his mark on the combine and then made his way off the 40, there's a new X coming in to fill that. And we all know how to say his last name, so I'm not going to even try it. No, I have only written it. I don't know that I've said Xavier Filsimi out loud. And so if I've said it wrong, tweet at Gerald. But four-star safety from McKinney High School, a guy who folks have already said just is coming in and looking like that prototypical safety, looking like he's fast, looking like, you know, he moves like a safety who's going to make plays out there. He has all the stuff. I don't anticipate, just because the secondary is getting older, that he'll have to play immediately, but he could be a guy who could force his way into the rotation just if he's looking as good and has the stuff as much as people seem to think in early spring. So he's a guy who I'm watching out for, especially in the back half of the season and obviously going into the future.
Kyle, you got your honorable mention with Wardell Mack. I'm going to do one as well. Sark specifically mentioned Duncanville defensive tackle Alex January, and Texas likes to play a lot of defensive tackles. That's a big old boy, and Duncanville plays some defense, so I'm curious to see what he looks like. The easy answer, Colin Simmons is the easy answer, the one that
double
Kyle
Duncanville
left for me.
Gerald, double, right? Duncanville.
We are Duncanville. But really, honestly, if you want to look at the like pure snap numbers, Ryan Wingo is your dark horse for this one. Dude came in. He is a day one starter at most schools. If Texas hadn't had the portal haul that they had, he would probably be a day one starter for Texas. So he seems like one of those guys who's just too talented to keep off the field. If he can get the route tree and his routes down, I anticipate him playing quite a bit. But yeah, Colin Simmons is like the easy answer.
The easy answer, but probably the right answer, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
Anyone who's listened to this podcast should know who that is. If you don't, look him up or listen to some of our old podcasts. Every podcast is someone's first podcast, and that's fine. But just, an otherworldly edge prospect who just was unfair in a way that I can't even comprehend in high school and has come in looking the part in college already and seems to be willing and able to put the work in that I think is going to pay off and make him a stud and an absolute day one contributor. I will be curious, and we can maybe talk it in the future spring looks, what you think about the transfers. I'm not as locked and loaded to go on those, so we'll come back And we'll talk a little bit about some of the transfers coming in, and I won't only talk about Trey Moore from UTSA. But I'm excited about many, many of the players who've made their way onto the 40.
Here's your hint for the transfer, guys. Mama, I'm coming home. There's your hint for the transfer. I think we'll take the biggest leap for Texas in this year. But it's spring practice. We'll have weekly updates for you. May not be this big of a chunk. It may just be a down the 40 item. But either way, we will have it for you. But that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. And we're going to start with the number 3 softball team in the nation, the Texas Longhorn softball team, sweeps BYU, outscoring them. This is not a typo, 30-3. Absolutely ridiculous. And it's not just that Texas outscored them by 10, a factor of 10. It's the fact that they came onto campus with one of the best offenses in the nation, and Texas pitching staff absolutely shut them down.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people had this one circled to look, right? Just Texas wobbled a little bit with that number one in front of their name, and some of it was pitching where they gave up some runs to U of H that weren't expected. They gave up some runs to LSU, especially early runs, right? They were giving up runs early and not able to score
them. Theme
on both
diamonds.
Correct themselves. People were interested in this, and then the 30-3. I think, yeah, the BYU was the 5th highest batting average in the country at 355 as a team. Had just a couple hits all weekend, a 136 average for the team for the entire weekend. They just had one earned run to the pitching staff for a team that was the 9th highest scoring offense in the nation, averaging almost 8 a game. So a high-powered BYU offense was shut down, and the bats did their part too, right? 30 runs over 3 games is exactly what you hope for when you say this is a team who wants to leave no doubt.
I mean, 2 run rules in a weekend series is pretty ridiculous. 13-0 on Thursday, 7-3 on Friday. They had a doubleheader because of the weather that rolled in on Saturday and Sunday. It also saved the Texas baseball team from getting swept. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And the Friday second game, 10-0 in 5. Reese Atwood just absolutely murdering the ball early and often. Now tied for 9th on the program single season RBI game with 23 games left to play in the regular season. That's good, right, Kyle?
Yeah, it's also good because this Texas team has hopes of playing well into a Big 12 tournament, well into a postseason tournament. She's got a lot of time. I think she's even like 8th place is like 2 away from her. So she will be quickly climbing up that list like in the next week or two. She's got a lot ahead of her. But as good as she was, I think on the batting side, Caden Henry may have been the breakout in this series, continuing to just look really great as a freshman. A very, very, very highly touted freshman at that, but in the
freshman
leadoff,
nonetheless,
in the leadoff role, she's stealing bases at a rate that probably will get her on those postseason lists as well. She has 15. I think she only needs like 8 more to get into the top 10 in a single season, something like that. 15 stolen bases on the year, and routinely stretching. And this weekend, she had one, a single. For any other player on the field, she turned into a double. Just if it gets into the outfield, she can do that. And I love when she does that. She had 3 doubles, I think, on the weekend. She stole 3rd on at least one of them, right? Not only getting to 2nd, but then stealing 3rd. She scored on a wild pitch because she just, when she's on the base pass, she makes people nervous. So love what she's doing. Reese Atwood has a player who's always on base to drive in, you know, to get those RBIs. So tremendous there. And then don't want to, you know, miss the chance to shout out Mac Morgan, who was unhittable, gave up a hit to the first on a 3-2 count, the first batter of the weekend to BYU, gave up a hit, and then just went ahead and got the next 15 consecutive without a ball leaving the infield. Without a ball leaving the infield, got the next 15 out, 12 groundouts, 3 strikeouts, no walks for her. Unbelievable performance from her to start it. And then again, not to be outdone, Citlali Gutierrez on Friday, 2nd game, the last of the series, 1 hit, 5-inning complete game shutout, 2 Ks, no walks, just great control from the sophomore as well. So great pitching after some wobbles that needed to be answered. I think they stood up and did everything they needed to this weekend.
When you have a weekend of struggles, this is the way that you want to respond to that. Next up for the ladies, they've got 13 games in 15 days. They've got number 16 Florida State on Wednesday as you're listening to it. Then they will stay in Florida for spring break, hitting up UCF before a weekend series, for a weekend series in Orlando. On the other diamond, I'm not going to spend much time here because I'm angry at them, but they lost the series to Washington and were saved by a weather delay from being swept at home. They lost the opener 9-3, lost the Saturday game 5-3, and avoided the sweep 4-3, but Washington was in the process of coming back in that one, but the combination of weather and travel forced that game to end early, ended after 8, and Texas avoided getting swept at home by Washington.
Yeah, I mean, in the first game, it happened in pretty much the same way, but in the first game, LeBaron Johnson goes 6 innings, 10 strikeouts, a season high, 1 run on 5 hits. He left the game with a 3-1 lead. It looked good. He was wheeling and dealing, and then the bullpen just imploded. They gave up 6 runs in the 7th right after he goes out, just, you know, turning the game on its head, never recovering from that. Saturday, they went down 3-0 in the first inning, chased the starter, Cody Howard, after only 2 innings, which has been a problem. The weak bullpen play has been exacerbated by starters getting chased with, you know, 1 inning, 2 inning, 3 innings of work. Every starter, not LBJ, has been a little bit susceptible this year. Ace Whitehead in that one, though, did look like a revelation. I hope he gets to start, you know, multiple midweek games or just be our next guy we trust out of the pen all year. But anyways, he threw 7, a career high, 7 shutout innings in relief, just 1 hit, 4 strikeouts. He threw strikes. Like, I think that's the thing. And you saw it on Sunday as well with Max Grubbs, a career high 6 innings, allowed 1 run on 5 hits, no walks, only 2 strikeouts, but he threw strikes. Like, throwing strikes, let your defense make plays, trust them. Don't walk, guys. Don't put yourself behind the eight ball. Right now, just throw strikes and go play good defense and try to get out. One notable thing on the Saturday game, Peyton Powell moved behind the plate. People were a little confused by this. He's a utility player who can play all over the field. If you remember, though, he was actually an all-state catcher in high school, was recruited as a catcher, even though he hasn't caught for us. Caught the Saturday and Sunday game. Looked good behind there. Threw some guys out. We know he's got the arm. So who knows if he's the solution there. If Pierce trying some things, changing some things up. But bats need to come through if the arms aren't going to give us what we need out of the bullpen and stars aren't going to go deep. We need to score 8 or 9 runs every game, and maybe that just has to be what it is until we can find the right alchemy in the bullpen.
Last thing I'm going to say about the baseball team is the pitching has been the issue for several years and running out of scapegoats. Next time on the diamond for Texas, they've got their season-long 10-game homestand welcoming Air Force, currently trailing the Falcons for the midweek series opener on Tuesday night. They'll play again on Wednesday. On the hard surface, keeping it country club, the number 9 men's tennis team gets 2 big wins on the road, go to UGA for a 4-3 win, although they clinched at 4-1, and then they swept USC 6-0.
Yeah, 2 really good programs, both top 50 teams, you know, that Texas went on the road across the country and showed out, right? In the first game against UGA, who's a historical power, they won the doubles, and then Spazieri M. Braswell and Lucas Brown won the singles to get the sweep without Spazieri playing 6-0 against, again, a solid USC team, I think is really great. And they have some tough ones on the horizon, which is why maybe Spazieri got the rest there. But, yeah, it's a good bounce back, I think. Winning against Ohio State, which is a huge win, and then getting 2 kind of top 50 wins to chase that will be a good palate cleanser to some heartbreaking close losses of the last month. Right, we've moved on, and now we're winning those matches from here on out.
On the ladies' side, number 7 team in the nation swept through the Big 12 teams that they played on the road, 4-love against Houston, and then 4-love against UCF as part of the USTA National Campus in Orlando.
Yeah, it's their 4th straight Big 12 sweep. I think Charlotte Shvatopolk got wins in both of them in the singles, Rapolu and Pachkaleva in the Houston matchup, and then Ovrutsky and Lieberman with the wins, first wins at least, to get to 4-0 against receiving votes, a top 60 team in UCF, who again was on their home course, which is the national campus in Orlando. So a place that Texas wants to win, and, you know, those numbers getting smaller for each of the teams as their top 10 Texas, some even smaller numbers on the horizon coming to Austin to test them out.
Speaking of top 10, both the men and the ladies have big matchups this weekend. The men open the Big 12 play for them at home against number 33 UCF on Friday, and then the Horned Frogs, number 2 in the nation, come to Austin to renew that rivalry that they just played a couple of weeks ago. On the ladies' side, they've got number 1 Oklahoma State at home on Friday, and then Kansas State on Sunday. Could be a big moving week for the tennis squads. Keeping it country club, number 20 men's golf claims a 5.5 to 1.5 victory over number 21 Illinois in an exhibition match play over the weekend.
Yeah, these are two great teams. Remember, these two programs are tied for the most NCAA match play appearances, making it through group play to match play, 7 apiece over the last 11 NCAA championships. So two of the better programs in the country over the past decade plus, going head-to-head, and Texas pretty dominant in it, right? Christian Moss halved, their last player, who's a redshirt freshman who doesn't historically factor into their scoring, did lose his, but the other 5 players against a top 25 team, you know, won pretty convincingly. And Texas, you know, is a match play demon, right? If they get you to match play, you see it in the Big 12s, you see it at the NCAAs. They're almost a different team. So this was a good matchup for them. Brian Stark, Tommy Morrison, Jacob Sosa, Nathan Protonzio, and Keaton Vo are dudes. Each record individual match play wins on Thursday. Looked good. I think this was, like I said, that I predicted last week that number would shrink. They went from 19 to 20. For the love of God, now can we get that down to around 15? Come on, folks, voters. It's real easy math.
Now keep overlooking them. Give them something to prove. Next up for them, they've got the Valspar Collegiate Invitational March 25th and 26th. That's a Monday through Thursday in Palm City, Florida. The number 13 women's track and field distance runner specifically headed down I-35 to the UTSA, not the USTA, but the UTSA Invitational to win both the 8 and the 1500 meters. Up next, they will reunite with the rest of the track team and compete this March 26th through 30 with something you may be familiar with, the 96th Clyde Littlefield Texas Relays. Avoid 6th Street that weekend. Finally, beach volleyball kicked off their second season on Friday. They've got first season under the new coach Stein Metzger, and the last season that doesn't count officially. They lost to number 7 Long Beach State Dirtbags, right? Cal State Northridge 3-2 on Friday, and then they got their first win of the season over Nebraska, and then fell to Arizona State 3-2.
Yeah, number 7 Long Beach State, number 11 Arizona State. Good challenges for a second year program that's still filling out their roster. They still have some indoor players playing for them, you know. But a good team. They had 2 different pairs of specifically outdoor players, both transfers from other schools, who went 3-1 on the weekend against some good opponents. Right, they beat Nebraska team, which then the volleyball account tweeted out. You know, Texas beats not Nebraska again, which is just hilariously petty and made the Nebraska fans very angry, which I love. But yeah, this was a good start, right? And they get to come home and kick off the program for the first time ever in Austin.
It's exciting to hear. So, first ever home matches this weekend, or this week, I suppose. Day you're listening to it, Wednesday, March 20th at 11 a.m. The Barry Whitaker Sports Complex. They've got not one, but 2 dogs coming to town, both Huskies, Washington and Houston Christian. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I was going to bang the drum after talking about Whitaker Fields on my favorite intramural memories from my time at UT, but you don't tune into this podcast specifically to hear me relive my glory days, but it was a freshman leadership organization intramural co-ed championship. Shout out to Emily Hoyle. Gerald, I'm talking this week like I am every week, like I am very infrequently, about hit recording artist, hip hop recording artist Plies. Gerald, when I say the name Plies, what's the first thing you think of?
Ratchet music probably is the right way to, I bus it, baby. I don't know.
No, it's all good. I usually first think about the fact that he's financially secure. He has plenty money. As he told us, I've got plenty money. You may be familiar.
I'm a bus it baby kind of guy.
And that's fine. There's no problem with that. You may be familiar with singles such as Bus It Baby, Shoddy featuring T-Pain, Hypnotize featuring Akon, great features around 2007 when those songs came out. Obsessed with his realness, of course, he released The Real Testament, his debut album, followed by Definition of Real, and finally Da Realist, with his first three albums. So a man who keeps it real. Gerald, born Algernon Lanier Washington. I didn't know this till I was on his Wikipedia. He attended Miami. He's from Fort Myers, Florida, but he attended Miami, but not the one in Florida. He went to the one in Ohio, and played football. He was a wide receiver on the football team. I think his before he transferred back to UCF his sophomore year, he had 25 catches for 262 and two touchdowns. You know, a decent little season there. Miami of Ohio, missed Roethlisberger, I think. Maybe. May have been around the same time. I'll have to double check that. But anyways, under the name Nod Washington, great name. But why am I telling you about Plies? Why are you hearing this? Because Plies keeps it real, Gerald. And he tweeted out this week when the brackets were announced that he, like many of us, is more excited to watch the women's March Madness than the men's. There's more stars and players you know and teams to watch, more fun to be seen in the women's tournament. And I kind of agree with them. And it's not just because Texas has a one seed on that side and a seven on the other. There's some good teams on the men's side, but there isn't that legendary player in the field. There isn't that team that you have to see. There's many good teams, and I will be watching a lot of them. But in the women's game, you talked about a few of them, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese. I mean, the freshman Juju out at USC, Hannah Hidalgo at Notre Dame, obviously Maddie Booker at Texas, South Carolina with all of their litany of stars, you know, the other players at LSU, Haley Van Lith and others. There's just stars that you know their name around the country this year. And I think this could be a record year with people tuning in, if not only to see Caitlin Clark, who's passed every player, including Pistol Pete Maravich, to be the all-time collegiate scorer, is a household name, just she shows up and puts on a show every time, and the bracket they set her up with is wild, with LSU in it as the three seed and just all kinds of good teams. I will be watching Texas, obviously, but I will be watching a lot of women's March Madness, and I just hope, like Plies implied himself, that it has plenty money. I hope that it is well funded, it is well attended, it is well watched, and that trickles into more support and further advancement of what is an incredible sport. Women's basketball at the collegiate level is so much fun, and it's a great thing to watch, and I hope it just continues to get bigger on the back of what is set to be a phenomenal tournament.
I mean, the women's tournament has been setting records, shockingly, when they started to publicize and get behind it in a bigger way and support the ladies' game, getting it on ESPN, and letting them even use the term March Madness, which was a silly thing to do, not letting them use it prior to that. I'm making drum this week on a united Texas. So one of the things that I've been really interested about, if you watch Steve Sarkisian's press conference today, he opened up talking about how excited he was for Vic Schaefer and Rodney Terry and how he was excited to support them and watch them on TV. And he spoke to the men's basketball team, and Vic Schaefer tonight was at the baseball game supporting the baseball team who closed the gap. They're now only losing 4-3 to Air Force, but Vic Schaefer was there supporting the team. And like, we've talked about for years that a united Texas is a dangerous Texas and a powerful Texas. And I just don't know if I've seen in recent years the coaching staffs this closely knit and the teams and players this closely knit. You saw Xavier Worthy at basketball games and women's basketball games. You saw Michael Huff, who's now a part of the staff on the football side. Former players Derek Johnson was there today with him. T'Vondre Sweat was back on campus as they prepped for pro day, and he was at campus. Huff was, it was like 70 something degrees today, and he was wearing a hoodie because he always does. but it had a picture of T'Vondre Sweat running his 40, and it said real speed. Like, Texas athletics is fun again, and the level of support that the players and teams and coaches are giving each other is just a sign of the health that we have been missing, because it seems out of place, but it shouldn't be. And so I'm just excited to see that the athletic department finally feels healthy, and a lot of it points back to hiring Chris Del Conte away from TCU and getting him here on campus to change the culture, because that culture comes down to leadership, and Chris Del Conte is the leader of the ship. So I'm just excited to see the unity and synergy of these players and these coaches and all former players getting together to support each other.
I love it. That's great. I love the support on men's side, on the women's side. Coach Flo reached out to Chris Polonsky to name her the honorary referee for the 96 Texas Relays. Like, synergy is high. It's good. The women are winning. The men are great and pushing each other to be greater. I love where it's at. Just one quick update, Gerald. Speaking of where it's at, it's halftime right now. The Colorado State UVA game. It is 27-14, and we got a football score on our hands.
UVA is trash.
It's hilarious. I wish we could play that UVA team, but anyways, that's a good bang the drum. That's a good place to leave this one for this week.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. I'll show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod, Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back Thursday with a live reaction of what seems to be a Texas-Colorado State game, but we'll have live reaction for you then. But until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Stop playing the University of Washington.